Hi, everyone. Matt here, Caustics Detox. Welcome back. This is the second part of the mega interview I did a week ago with Brian Grautner of the Gotsicles, and now joining us in this interview, Eric Gottesman of Everything Goes Cold, also known as Eric from C. Collins Slash, Cyclon 9, and about 400 other projects. He also works on Caustic now and again with me and plays live with me. So without further ado, you know, let's do this shit. Enjoy.
All right, so we're finishing up with Brian, or seeging into you, and we've this is actually a good time actually for Eric to come in, because I'm sure he got a lot of that with C. Collins Slash.
We're talking about
women.
Like, nope.
Really, really large.
No, we really don't
really,
want
really, really large.
No,
nope.
We're actually talking
about
irregular breasts. Yes, we are. Yeah. So everybody, this is Eric Gottesman of Everything Goes Cold, formerly C. Collins Slash, Cyclon 9, and about 400 other bands where he performed various oral duties. But Brian and I were talking about not getting respect, kind of, or being dismissed as a comedy thing when you're doing something, and or else getting backhanded.
The fact that all three of us look decidedly similar to Rodney Dangerfield is a major element of this.
But I mean, we're just talking about, like, fucking, like, or getting backhand compliments, like, that was actually good. Which, yeah, I'm sure you've
actually
gotten.
Yes.
See, okay, now he's gonna fuck around. Now he's like, you just gotta turn him on now. Yeah, I mean, but you know what I'm saying.
Hey,
like,
you guys are always turning me on.
Thank you. But you know what I mean. With C. Collins Slash, I'm sure, I mean, you guys put a lot of time and a lot of effort into the music. And the music's fucking solid. Yeah. But I'm sure you got a ton of people that were just like we were talking about right before the doorbell rang, is like, oh, you actually put some time into that. Like, thinking like we put no effort. Like, we just, like, jerked off onto the keyboard and, like, oh, good enough. Here's my funny lyrics about my funny song.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, like, I did get that all the time to see Colin Slash, but at the time, you know, I mean, I started working on that when I was, like, 17, so I always sort of chalked it up to, oh, they're surprised that this is good because I'm young. And now in retrospect, I'm like, wait a minute, no. They're like,
they're just condescending pricks.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or surprised for no good reason, and it's just weak.
I have to say about that, by the way, there's a sort of, every time I get into these conversations, and, you know, and obviously all three of us get this, every single time we have an interview, like, the first fucking question is, so, do you feel like you have a lot of problems being a funny artist in the industrial scene, right? So you get that, like, some variation of that every single time.
I get beat up at every show. Like, what? I mean,
yeah. But I always cite the same thing. I say, you know, I talk about, you know, Gothicals, I talk about Caustic, and then I say, and then I make a big point of mentioning, like, right before either of us started, there was Compressor and Bool.
Yeah,
we were talking about Bool before, and Epsilon Minus.
But even, like, Kraftwerk.
Well, Epsilon Minus is sort of a weird example because, of course, like, 3/4 of that stuff was completely serious, right? Like,
yeah, but until when Jen left.
When Jen left, yeah.
Post-Jen Epsilon Minus,
like,
we'll say. Yeah,
yeah. I think Jen and Funny Music, the closest we're ever getting is that Invincible cover, which is awesome. But,
oh, God. Okay.
Oh, don't say that.
I haven't heard it yet.
But Invincible by Pat Benatar.
Yeah, no. I had to think of who sang the song. That's why I said, oh, God.
It's a great cover.
No reflection on Jen. Actually, it's the second time I've almost sounded like I was insulting Jen this week.
You don't want to do that.
No, I would never. She's like the nicest human being on earth. No, on Facebook, somebody was like, oh, you said something, and it was, like, raunchy. And I'm like, if you want pleasant fucking, talk to Jen.
Oh.
Jen, you know? And I said, who's a lovely person? But I'm like, if you want not this. Yeah, here's a good example of someone to go speak to. Don't fucking be on my Facebook page and get offended all of a sudden when I'm, like, talking about,
is,
you know,
that is pretty dumb.
blowing a child.
So she's playing a show in Phoenix. When is that? Sunday? No, wait. No, it's Saturday. And, yeah, it's tomorrow. And I was originally, she asked me to play, but it wasn't possible because I've got, you know, all these Everything Goes Cold shows. But she just needed one more person and just needed to be a musician because Mike Weimer couldn't make it. So she's got him. Mike Jenny from Altered Your Ruin is going to be playing drums for her.
Oh, sweet.
So this is going to be an amazing show.
That's awesome.
So if you're anywhere near Phoenix, you must go out and catch that.
Yeah, even though this will probably be
I was really professional
tomorrow.
Getting a plug in.
That was a nice plug for her.
It was a good plug. It's a good plug for Mike.
But you were saying, I'm sorry, we got sidetracked.
Well, so I was actually, this is an interesting point. Every time I bring this up, I mention Bool and Compressor, who I feel were the phase right before us. But Compressor is a weird example, right? Because Compressor had extremely, extremely low production value. And I think we all do stuff that, and I mean, you have like loose production, certainly on some of your albums, not in all cases.
Well, it's because I didn't know what I was doing, and still, actually, I was working on a shit system.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's part of it, but I think it's also, you know, I mean, you were doing, you were stylistically doing stuff that simply made more sense to be a lot noisier. Yeah, but, you know, but Compressor was really like low grade production, and I remember somebody told me a while ago who it was that guy actually was.
Oh, it's the guy, the toothpaste for breakfast guy.
So I think
toothpaste for him.
And it's funny because I always cite him, but then sometimes I think, man, am I sort of diluting my point by bringing up this guy who maybe wasn't doing stuff that was at as professional a level, I suppose.
I've heard him played in clubs and people getting wild and been like, that was really good.
Knocking out.
Well, that was so, he was
getting
so big on whatever.
Oh, I mean, you.
He was like on MP3.com. That's where he kind of blew up, right? If it was there and where.
I have an MP3.com CD from System Sin.
Cool.
Which every couple of years I'll threaten Clint that I'm going to like put it out on the internet. Oh, people get to it. It's very different. Very different.
That's hilarious.
It takes. The learning curve happens.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, I just find it interesting. And it was like, and you just played Kinetic.
Yep.
First time. How was it for you, by the way? I saw some of the video.
It's funny because you're saying first time, but it's like, well, actually, it's my
first time everything goes cool.
It's like my 12th time.
I mean, you played in 400 bands over the last couple of years, though, but I mean, I saw some of the video, and it's since it's hard to see how it really was. I mean, you guys looked good. It looked like it sounded good, but it was all, you know, handheld.
It was killer. First of all, there's going to be, of course, you know, the pro video from Noisescape.
Of course.
At some point. But yeah, one of the audience members, Dave, Shifty Dave.
That's where I saw the video.
Put up footage of the complete video, which is great. It was fantastic. It was a huge stage, you know, a big audience, biggest audience we've ever played for. It was observed that a lot of people cleared out right after Frontline, which at the time I was like, oh, people are just like being lame or whatever.
When did you play?
We played after Frontline. That's right. Frontline opened for us.
I thought you were like second in the lineup on the thing.
Yeah, it looked JF like the way he put the thing out. It looked like we were going to be like third.
And then corporate
Corrupted Suburbs.
Corrupted Suburbs.
Yeah. Who, unfortunately, they're the one band that I really wanted to see this year that I missed.
I saw them last year, or the year before.
It was the year before last we saw them. They were really great. I think that guy doesn't like me.
I don't know. Let's talk about it on here.
Corrupted Suburbs guy. I hope you like me because I like you.
So you played fucking dude. That happens every time.
Oh yeah, exactly. How many last bands I played in now?
Oh my god, dude! Like after I remember last year after Covenant played, like three quarters of the crowd left and Mellotron came on, and I expected them to hold most of the crowd.
And then of course, you know, we were on with Unternal after that.
Yeah, and this is not. I mean, that's not a slight towards Mellotron. I mean, just it really doesn't matter what fucking unless Combat Christ comes on after Covenant or a band of similar.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I think
notoriety.
We did Last of the Night twice with Caustic, and I felt like we had a pretty good audience.
We did the last year, especially because I mean, I think people expected me to.
Yeah,
but they didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah, there was that.
But of the nights, I think of the last band nights, we definitely had a huge crowd by comparison.
Yeah, I think awesome.
It was really wild. So.
Well, so but the thing is, I never really noticed that big of a drop off in audience previously, possibly just because I was drunk. But we had a pretty big shift, and I realized by the second or third night, I think that they were the lighting guys were doing something that was making people think the show was over. Like raising
the house lights or something?
Yeah, it was like the house lights came halfway on. And of course, I was standing backstage when Frontline went off, so I didn't notice that. But then, so that was a little annoying. So hopefully that won't happen again. But we still did have a great crowd. It was still the biggest crowd, of course, that we've had.
It's awesome.
For ourselves, certainly. And we put on a good show. We had a bunch of awesome special guests. Gyrus from Adversary came on and played.
Cool. He played Theremin.
That
was him. I saw it from far away, and I'm like, is that fucking Gyrus?
Yeah, I know. I forgot. Like, that was the one call out that I forgot to make at the show was Gyrus. And then we had a Jarb from Paniclift. We had good reason to believe that our guitarist was not going to make it to the show, James. Thankfully, he did.
Oh, he took him a couple times to get into the country, didn't it?
It cost us like $1,000. It was a nightmare. But anyway, okay. But he did make it. But you know, just in case, Jarv trained, learned to play all the songs, and then he came up with us from New York. And so you know, we were like, well, now we got this awesome extra guitarist. We got to do something with him.
Utilize that shit.
Yeah, so he came on and played the last part of the set. And then Kane from Left Spine Down, this is funny. earlier on in the day, I'd been like, you know, we do What Time Is Love, and we usually like to get guest vocalists,
yeah.
But as usual, I had prepared poorly and hadn't really asked to see if anybody wanted to do it ahead of time. So, you know, I casually asked a couple of my friends if they wanted to come on and do it, and everyone's like, I don't really know it well enough. So Kane tells me that. He's like, oh, that does sound fun. Maybe if I get an MP3, then it didn't really happen. So I didn't think he was coming up, but he just, like, blasts onto the stage and, like, runs up and grabs the wrong mic and is like, phew! And it was...
I did that together. I did that with you in Phoenix when we played.
Oh,
I did What Time Is Love, and I had it memorized eighth of a second before I hit the stage. Which is rough business.
That's like it. Well, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like anybody's listening to lyrics live.
No, but
I mean, completely wrong.
I mean, we're doing What We Care A Lot tonight, and I haven't even had a chance to really practice it and figure out the lyrics again, because I haven't listened to it in a while. I mean, I've listened to the original version, but not the version we worked on together, and, you know, whatever, fuck it, we'll get through it. I mean,
well,
I was actually telling Sigurd, I'm like, you know, I don't like fucking up, even though I fuck up every single show. I mean, Who's Up and Riot, those lyrics vary per track.
I love fucking up. That's my
favorite
thing.
I do such a good job. But, you know, I try to nail it more than I don't. And We Care A Lot. We'll see how that goes tonight. But, well, that's cool. No, but the thing was that I heard after that, because I kind of asked, you know, hey, you know, who you guys like? And, you know, we're on my page, and a lot of people were talking about you guys, which made me really happy. Because what Brian and I had talked about earlier was how you kind of have to see the Goth Skulls to really understand them.
Oh,
and
definitely.
I think definitely, I mean, I think the music works on its own. More accessible level than maybe Caustic and the Gothicals do, but at the same time, I think you have to, having played with you and done a show with you and really seeing how you kind of operate, plus I know you as a performer, you kind of understand it a little bit better.
Well, I think that, I mean, first of all, I gotta say, obviously, most of you probably know, and maybe you've mentioned this, that we were just out on this 2-week tour with Aesthetic Perfection and Faderhead.
No, we didn't.
Okay, so we were just out on this 2-week tour with Aesthetic Perfection and Faderhead, and we just played, this is going to be like our 19th show in a row, pretty much.
Wow.
And I haven't set foot in my house for over a month. Which is
a lot.
Difficult.
Yeah.
But good, but difficult. But anyway, we really like... You know, the only way to really get better as a performer is to play shows. I mean, rehearsal helps, but...
But, I mean, just getting out there and doing the...
But you have to actually get out and play shows to get better. So doing, like, a concentrated run like this is great. So our show is, like, 1,000 times better now than it was, like, a month ago.
Sure.
And so, obviously, I hope people will come out and see us tonight. I hope we'll have more shows scheduled eventually so that people can come out and see us later.
Yeah.
You know, like, after this podcast has gone up.
Sure. That's cool.
But
you better pander to promoters while doing this podcast, because
yes.
Three of them listen to it.
Yes.
I counted them.
That's right, Chris Smack. I'm talking to you.
Chris Smack of New York City's, whatever, SmackDown? What the fuck's his thing called? He is
Stimulate.
SmackDown.
Yes.
I just gave your event a bitch name. That's why I'll never get to play New York City again. All right,
yeah,
so.
Fucked.
Yeah,
fucked.
Whatever.
Anyway, no, I was like midway through some sort of like, you know, oh, like, you know, we should really like play the show for you, blah, blah, blah conversation with him. And I got cut off like 6 times in Kinetic. And then like at the end, we were like walking out. And I was like, oh, we can't. Yeah,
dude, that's the roughest place to fucking try and have a conversation with anybody.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Wait a minute. I had some point that I was making. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we've got. So I think our show's really good right now, but it's definitely like. I don't think we're not as visually oriented as, certainly, as the Gothicals, because, I mean, you know, you guys have the video projection, which is, like, this really key thing that, and I don't, it's funny to say that, because I think that sometimes people have video projections and then they have no show, which is definitely not the case with the Gothicals. It's like, it's this really, like, it's an engaging show on its own, but it works with the video projection.
Thank you.
Well, it does. No, I mean, yeah, some people are just like, well, I'll just watch that, because there's
squat going on
there's
stage.
All going on stage.
We want to have a video projection that will bring things together a little bit more. We want to get, you know, do stuff with, like, you know, animating the fridge robot, Edgar, and
nice.
All that stuff.
But
we just, I mean, that's a lot of work, and we're out of money and we're out of time, and, eventually.
Well, I'm gonna jump back, because with Brian, we kind of started from the beginning, and you've got a similar...
You were going to hit your head.
Nah, he's really good in that chair.
No, I'm good, man.
Jumping back, but...
It's all right.
I'm going to use the restroom.
Brian's going to go piss, and we'll start off talking
Brian is going to piss.
Let's start off with the world of C. Colin Slash. This is your first thing. A lot of people knew you for it because of, just the fun shit y'all were doing, but give the basic story of how C. Colin Slash started.
It began with Brian peeing.
No, it didn't.
You're right. I've lied to you again.
Give us some history, bitch.
All right. Wait, how did Seacall and Slash start? Well, okay, so I'm 17 years old. I have my cheesy goth band that I was in high school had broken up.
What were they called?
Don't make me say that.
Say it, dude.
You're never going to find anything.
That's fine.
Okay, they were called Mendacity. Shut up.
No, dude, this is what we do here. You've listened to these,
I think. Oh, yeah, that's fine. No.
I'm not going to make you cry or anything or break up that you got touched by your uncle or some shit, unless you were, and I'm sorry that I brought that up. But but no, you just say it. It doesn't matter.
No, actually, you know, the funny thing is, actually, I joined that band when I was, like, 14, 15 years old. You know, the first thing that happens is, like, so can we change the band name? It never happened.
No. So you started to see...
Anyway, I broke up the band, and I decided to start working on my own, and I was just starting to get into industrial music, so I decided to buy a sampler, and I bought some... whatever it was that I bought, I didn't wind up liking it. I was taking it back to Guitar Center, and I see this guy wearing a Thrill Kill Cult shirt at Guitar Center, and I'm wearing a Thrill Kill Cult shirt, and we kind of look at each other, and we're like, oh, crap, we match. You know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We make eye contact for... And I think we might have had 10 seconds of conversation about, like, oh, did you like that sampler? No, I didn't. Whatever. That's it. Think we'll never see each other again. Then, like, you know, half a year later, I go to UC Berkeley, and I'm sitting there, like, in the, you know, in the food thing. What do you call it?
Cafeteria?
Well, the place where you eat in the dorms, the dorm cafeteria.
Yeah.
And I see this dude, and I'm like, you look really familiar. Did I meet you, like, 6 months ago at a guitar center? He says, yeah. And I don't know. Turned out we were living in the same building. And it was like, you know, this is 400 miles away because I grew up in Los Angeles and then went to UC Berkeley for school. But yeah, then we started a band and
his name?
I'm not going to tell you his name.
It's come on, don't be like that.
His name was Greg Dunn.
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
Because he's dead.
But not anymore.
To us. No, he's Greg's awesome.
Greg is awesome. He's working. He's living in Philly now. He's got his current project is called Mr. Twit, which is also awesome.
Really good. Yeah.
Not even remotely industrial, but awesome.
But awesome. So, yeah. So you guys got together, started.
Yeah.
So I really don't know the history of this.
Well, okay. So I'm trying to figure out like how deep into this like go.
Well, it's interesting. Do some.
Okay. So we spent some time like sort of like dicking around. Like actually, the way that it really started was. He had a keyboard that like was something that I was thinking of buying. It was one of those Roland Groove Synth things, the blue ones.
Okay.
And so he was like,
I just wanted to fix my hair for the podcast.
It looks really fucking good now.
Guys, just so you know, Brian's hair is like fucking some Lady Gaga shit right now.
Did you practice that in the mirror?
Yeah, I hope.
Do you like the new bathroom, by the way?
It's actually quite nice. But you bought a keyboard from this guy.
No, I didn't even...
See,
Wait, no. You see what happens is Brian comes in, he doesn't know the new shit.
It's okay.
He starts fucking shit up.
It's all but I just wanted to go back to you. bringing it all the way. See, it's not about me now.
Just so you guys know, I'm like transfixed by this like sexy Supergirl picture from this
from MarsCon.
MarsCon thing
that's
down there.
A con we played up in Minnesota. I played with the Gossicles, and it was the weirdest experience I've ever had playing with the Gossicles. We played in a conference room essentially with all the lights on. Was that? Did they actually have a sound system? They actually had a sound system for that.
Yeah.
Oh, the weirdest one was OddCon in Madison, where we played through the speakers in the ceiling.
That was MarsCon knows what they're doing, and I'm not shitting on OddCon, but they,
no, I'm not shitting on them either. It just was weird.
I am shitting on them.
We just had
right
a disconnect as about what we needed as a band, but that con was. I mean, it's always awesome to play for like a room full of Klingons, right? Like,
it was a learning experience for me.
Yeah, like Elvis and
Perth. Although. Always awesome for most bands. Possibly not so awesome for Spock. Might be uncomfortable.
Oh, that'd be great.
They would get...
I've seen them
they would
once.
Get molested.
Well, either that or they'd be killed, you know, for insulting them.
Either way, but that's what that's from. So anyway, you bought a keyboard.
I know! There was no keyboard buying.
Why'd you buy a keyboard?
Then? I didn't...
This is the shittiest history of Seacall and Slash. If this was behind the music, we would
all right. Let me try to make this into a coherent. This isn't nobody ever asked me about this shit, so I don't have like a
that's
story
why
prepared.
I do this. That's why
all
I
right.
do this. I want to fucking know. We need to get this out there for
all right,
posterity
all right.
or
so,
for these people
so
to turn this
we
off.
We basically, you know, we were sort of just dicking around, you know, like, oh, look what I did. Oh, look what I did. And, you know, hey, what if I added this to that? That kind of thing. And, which is actually, it's funny how difficult making collaboration like that happen can be. At times, but I don't know, he and I worked well together on that front, and then we did, like, a couple, like, we put together this cover song, it was, like, for this New Order cover compilation, it was terrible, I actually don't even think I have the files for it anymore.
What song was it?
Oh, it was, I think it's like the last song on Low Life. Like, oh, how I cannot bear the thought of you. What the hell's the name of that song?
Doesn't matter. I just wanted to hear you sing.
It's a lot. Yeah. Thank you.
Voice like an angel.
Like an angel. Anyway. But then, I sort of started writing hardcore.
Like Gabber stuff?
No, the song. The sequel.
Oh, I was like, what am I saying? Of course.
Yeah, no, I...
I was like, what?
That
would have been a twist.
Yeah, that would have been a good twist. It turned out I was actually an influential rave DJ in Germany in the 1980s. Unbeknownst to myself at the time. So I started writing that.
I just
wanted
to make good music.
So I started writing that, and this... I had been on this email list, because that was what you did at the time, email list.
That's the only way you could get news.
The San Francisco... Goth and Industrial music email list, as opposed to the regular San Francisco Goth and Industrial list, which is just people bullshitting. This one was like specifically for musicians, and this guy was like, who will remain nameless and hopefully isn't listening to this, was like, hey, I'm gonna put out a compilation CD of all the local artists, who wants to be on the CD. And I was like, oh, I'd love to do that, you know, because we just wrote this song that I thought was really good, but we need some help producing it properly.
Okay.
So if anybody would like to, you know, because, you know, of course we didn't have home recording software at the time, the same way that we do now. This is like 98.
Right.
End of 1998. And, you know, and I'm like, so if anybody could help us with it, you know, that'd be great. And it seemed weirdly quiet on the list. This seemed like this really exciting opportunity and not too many people responded. And I was like, oh, that seems weird. I like, there's all these people talking all the time and this guy writes in and nobody says anything. And I was like, oh, that's weird. And anyway, so we go through a couple of versions of it, and they weren't, you know, with a couple of different people, they weren't really satisfactory, so eventually, the dude putting together a compilation volunteers. He's like, hey, I'll help you produce your song.
Okay.
This winds up being one of the most nightmarish experiences of my musical existence. It is right up there with Christian from Deathline being deported, and Abbey Vane firing their guitarist in the middle of our van breaking down on a Cyclone tour in 2005, which if you've ever heard that story, that was a nightmare.
I have, you told me that one before.
So this one, on top of being just as nightmarish on several levels as those things, it was like 6 months of like hell recording one song with this dude who is...
6 months?
Yeah, how this happened, how we wound up in this quagmire, I have no idea, but it was like, it was just hellacious. And by the end of it, we hated the song so much, and we hated the guy so much, we were like, we want nothing to do with any of these things.
No.
So anyway, so it took us a little while to get back into the groove, but it was like, at that point, it was like, we've been slogging through it. I was like, no, we're going to make this fucking work. We're going to make this fucking work. So, you know, we put some more songs together. And then eventually we moved in together. And when we moved in together, we were like, we were both like walking around playing like Simon and Garfunkel crap on acoustic guitars all the time.
Yeah.
And I had to convince, Greg thought this was a terrible idea. I had to convince him of it. I was like, hey, we should like, you know, play industrial songs, like, on the acoustic guitars. And he's like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But eventually, you know, like, I came up with, like, a way to justify it about Headhunter. I was like, well, you see, the thing is, it'll be this satirical thing about how there are too many different versions of Headhunter. Because this is, like, by this time, it's, like, 2000. So Headhunter 2000
just
came out.
Yeah, like, 24, 30 remixes or whatever it was.
Yeah, which is, it's, like a five-disc set of remixes of Headhunter. A five-disc set of remixes of a song that already had a single with remixes on it, like, 20 years before or something. Ten years before.
At least, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. But that worked out really well. People really liked it, so we started doing more of those. And to date, every band that we ever did one of those acoustic versions of has heard and weighed in on what they thought of it. Or some have even commissioned us to do them, with the single and solitary exception of Bebo and Baton. So, Bebo and Baton, if you're listening... I hope you enjoyed our acoustic folk version of Another World.
it was really good.
Yeah, thank you.
And I think the first time I really listened to you guys when you did Knight Riders.
Yeah.
Which I thought was like fucking...
Yeah, and I've told you a story about that, right?
Probably.
No, so I'll tell the podcast the story. The reason we did that was we were playing a show with Strong Current.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah.
And it was like right when Knight Riders was like the really big hit, so we opened our show with their big hit. Which I thought was really funny.
Yeah.
In retrospect, also maybe kind of a dick move, but...
you know.
Yeah. But it was... they liked it. It was funny. Oh, and the best part was Ned didn't recognize it. He was like, God, I know this song, but I can't place what it is.
What?
This is what Rob and Kelly told me later.
That's hilarious.
At the time, Strom Kern was Rob, Kelly, Ned, and I think they had...
Burger?
No. It wasn't Matt Berger. Those three Dustin, guys. It was the drummer, Dustin, I think. He hasn't been around for a long time. I don't know.
Might have.
Anyway, Robin Kelly told me the story later. Ned was like, "God, I recognize this, but I can't place what it is."
I've been like that with remixes of Caustic. I'm like, "What the fuck is this?" And then all of a sudden, I hear myself. Or even worse, when the songs that I didn't sing anything, I'm like the first like unicorns,
yeah,
kittens and shit. I'll be like, "Oh, what's this?" And they're like, "That's this remix." And I was like, "Oh." that's disrespecting myself and the person who did the remix. So yeah, then you guys eventually, I mean, you guys did played a bunch. You broke up, I think then we played the Caustic Gothsicles and Seacon right. Slash played the reunion show,
right?
Or the one off, you know, thing.
Yeah, well,
because you finally put the CD out.
So what happened was we did actually have CDs originally, but they were like these. I mean, they were like we pressed like 50 each, and they weren't at all professional. It was like, you know, they were like CDRs that I did by hand that, you know, weren't mastered and the mixing was bad and there were all these problems with them and they were inconsistent. Some of them might not have worked, whatever. The kind of crap that you had to do back in those days because nobody could afford to do anything properly. And also, I mean, you know, we were kids and we didn't know what we were doing.
Sure.
But then like, it was actually, I think the main thing that happened was I saw some interview with Brian where he mentioned us, and I had sort of thought of us as like a local band that never really managed to get out there, and it was like, oh, here's some dude that I've never met in, you know, a state that I've never been to who's like citing us, and I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And then like, you know, and then must have been around, right around the same time, Ben from TerraFact, who was already friends of mine, and I knew him through, you know, Cyclone 9 shit and everything, says he wants me to do a remix, and I'm like, oh, okay, and, you know, and I was like, it was gonna be like an Eric Gottesman remix, and he's like, oh, yeah, can it be a Seacon Slash mix? And I'm like, wait a minute, what? Like,
you didn't realize people, anybody...
I did not think anybody outside of the Bay Area had any idea who we were, so...
That's weird. I mean, I knew who you were more because of Brian mentioning it, I think, but still, in hearing other stuff.
Well, we didn't realize that we'd had any sort of reach, so at that point I was like, all right, well, the fact that people actually knew about us and cared about us, and I've now got some sort of verification on that... Now I feel justified in actually spending some money and putting some time and effort into putting out a CD. Like a real CD, because by that time, of course, I knew how to do that properly. So,
I was really obsessed with you guys for a little bit.
Yeah, that's
all past.
That's really weird.
Yeah, I know, it's because we're friends now, but it's like, because I was starting out at that, and I see you had this really nice website, and you're like a couple steps ahead in the game.
Yeah.
And like, you know, these recordings, and they were good. And I was just like, just really kind of blown away by it. I just wanted to interject there. It kind of felt like the right thing to do.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that you had low standards.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I was really disappointed when I first met you. Just like, oh, there goes that Match.com date, you know.
But you did put the CD out.
Well, I did put the CD out, and I'm still sitting on a lot of them because I pressed too many, but that's okay.
Dude, you gotta see my garage.
but I'm really glad I did it because it gave us some good closure on it and it gave us an opportunity to do some cool stuff. And actually, most importantly to me, to clean up problems in the production with the originals of some of those songs. If you guys get like the original version of You Make Me Feel Like Morrissey, it's a bunch of garbage. It sounds awful. And the reason is that we were doing that right when the band was breaking up and Greg used to do all the production work. And he didn't want to help me on that because, I don't know, he just didn't want to help. He was being grumpy. And, like, so I did all this stuff myself, and it was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
I think it's a good, I mean, if anything, I'm glad, I was really happy that it came out just because people could have it.
Oh, especially, yeah.
There's my fish in a bag version there.
The full bag?
Yeah.
What time's loading?
7.
Okay.
So we got an hour?
Yeah, we got some time.
So we got a little time. Then we'll jump into Cyclone 9 for a little bit. Then let's talk.
That doesn't bode well.
There's a million stories. So, you basically joined Nero for Marshall for Cyclone 9.
Yes, 6 years.
Many stories there.
Which many stories.
We'll have a 3-parter on that someday. But then in the meantime, you also jumped in. You were jumping in for a lot of other bands.
Okay, so what happened was actually right around the same time Seacon Slash was starting was when I got into Deathline International.
That was
my first sort of pro level gig, and we did a lot of touring. And you kids these days, you don't remember the Cold Wave, but if you did, you know that Deathline International had this fucking amazing all star lineup with, you know, people from, God, let's see here, Battery, Fish Tank Number 9, who eventually became Hungry Lucy, hold on a minute, Heavy Water Factory, Don Gordon from NUMB worked on a little bit of stuff, believe it or not.
Sure.
Mark Pistol from Consolidated.
I remember you could buy it downtown here in Madison at B-Side. They had it at B-Side.
Yeah, there's...
I never bought it.
Wait, you never bought which?
Deathline.
Oh, well. You should have gotten the album Arashi
no
Syndrome.
No way! Too late
fuck
now.
You, man. Well, Arashi Syndrome by Deathline was a fucking awesome album that I was really into, and it was great because it was like this band I already listened to was like, oh, hey, come play guitar for us. Wasn't a very good guitarist, but I did anyway.
Sure.
And I was apparently better than the last guy they had, which I thought was funny. Nerve Factor. Those guys were in the band with me at the same time. That was cool. Razor Skyline. Anyway, so I did that, and I learned a lot about how to do things touring, as opposed to a Cyclone 9, where I learned a lot about how not to do things.
Yeah. It's nice that they've continued that tradition to, well, whatever the last day was that they were doing stuff. So it is on hiatus.
Well, actually, and I should say some of that how not to do things was because I was acting as manager a lot of the time, and I... Not for any of the really bad things that you guys are probably thinking of. I was gone by then, but, you know, but I mean, we definitely made a lot of mistakes in the early days. We were all kind of learning, what to do.
Sure.
And I mean, I sort of, this is always complicated because I know like there's all this like bad stuff that happened, I know some people listening to this are probably just like, you know, fans, on a level that they're not necessarily hearing these sorts of bad stories, but there were some things that happened that were not so good, and I haven't really talked to Marshall in a long time, but I mean, we're not really on bad terms, and I definitely, like, the other guys I talked to fairly regularly, actually, I saw almost everybody on this tour, except for Kevin, who never calls, he never writes. Kevin, Dr. Seven, if you want to ever remind me that, you know, you still love me, I'd appreciate it.
Get back to it.
I'm sorry.
Kevin's not going to listen. He doesn't
know why. But you know, we made a lot of mistakes in the early days, definitely, that I learned a lot from that I use now. And but I was doing that and Deathline and C-Call and Slash, and those three things all at once for a long time. Last part of college, Cyclone, we started in 2001, and it was originally, there was like one show as Cyclone 9 that was just Marshall and Joseph Heresy, and then I joined right after that. And that was this whole thing.
So you've been in a zillion other projects. We don't need to name them all because it's a lot. How did you decide? When did you decide to start doing everything Ghost Gold? I was trying to lead all the way up to.
Okay.
To what your new incarnation. You're getting out of the. I mean,
yeah.
Finally getting out of under the shadow of C-Con Slash and Cyclone 9. And
coming I was ever under the shadow of C-Con Slash.
No, you weren't,
Slash.
Dude. I mean, if somebody asks about Eric Gosman, they say, "Oh, from C-Con Slash," or "Eric Gosman from Cyclone 9." And then and it took you for fucking ever to do Everything Goes Cold, but now you're really doing your own thing.
Not really, but
well, okay. Here, that's an easy question that I can actually answer without going off on some stupid tangent.
Fair enough.
When C-Call and Slash ended in 2003, I immediately was like, all right, well, I got to do a follow up thing because you know I wanted my career to continue in this certain trajectory. I wanted to keep on doing industrial music and being involved, and I wanted to keep on singing. I was already doing these other bands, but I wasn't singing in them. They were other people's projects, so I was like, okay, I gotta do my own thing. And so I started working on that, and the first things I did were I did some remixes. I did a remix for Unternall that was on the Sick Fuck single.
Okay.
I did a remix of Your Nightmare, which it's a great remix. Unfortunately, Alpha Matrix screwed up and put the wrong version on it, which I keep on meaning to ask Erica if I could just go put out the correct version, because it's a lot better, but... I did that. I did a remix for this weird indie rock band called Funeral Diner, and then I did one for Area, which is on the 2-disc version of Flickr. And I was doing all those as Everything Goes Cold, and then, but right as that was happening, like Cyclone started really picking up. Like we started getting really busy, and it was getting to the point where we were having serious discussions about like, God, like should we be quitting our jobs to tour 6 months out of the year? And obviously that didn't happen, which is probably for the best. But we were getting really, really busy, so I let the Everything Goes Cold stuff slide. And I was also having a lot of problems with trying to decide what it was really going to be about, because I wanted it to be this really serious thing. You know, I wanted it to be like NUMB and Frontline and like real, like, you know, grr industrial, grr spit, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure.
Because that's what I was into at the time, and it took me a while to come to a good, happy medium where I was like, all right, well, I can be a little satirical, a little bit funny, and still have it be like me, but then not have it be, you know, a flat out a completely funny project the way the C-Call and Slash was. And so I think once I got to that point, you know, I started setting goals for myself. Like, I was like, all right, Everything Goes Cold is going to play a show by the end of this year. So, you know, so I put myself in this huge rush, found people, I wrote more songs really quick, and then I got us a show with, our first show ever with Combi Christ, which might have been a bit much for our first show ever, which of course was terrible because every band's first show ever is terrible. that was not a great show, but yeah, and then it pretty much, and by that, and at that point, I had some momentum going, so I made it happen. And yeah. And then, you know, we only had like an EP's worth of songs, but I was like, all right, well, I really want to put out some music. So we did the EP. We did that with you guys, of course, through Sonic Mainline, which was great. And that worked out great. It was a great jumping off point to get the album going on Bit Riot. And yeah.
So on and so forth.
Yep.
Well, how did... there you go. Now, this is why I like doing this podcast. Now we have like a whole history of these bands that I'm sure a lot of people have never heard.
Yeah.
And that makes me really happy personally. But, all right, so let's go to the touring stuff, and let's do a little more of a round table discussion.
But now I'd like to take it down a notch.
Now let's take it down a notch. No, okay, we started off talking about how people perceive us, and then they see us live.
Right.
And do either of you think that has changed over the years as people have gotten to, as you weren't, haven't become just the new band. Like, people, Gospel's been around a long time. Caustic's been around a long time. Everything Goes Cold is of the bands, in terms of other audiences seeing them. People haven't seen you live until this tour. Kinetic.
Well, yeah,
most people have never even really heard of you unless they really pay attention. This is true. I mean, yeah, you know, unless.
Well, thanks, God.
People were like, no, we had no idea they were, and they're fucking awesome. I'm like, yes. Yeah. But do you think the opinions have changed in general over the years? Like, do you think people don't come in with the, oh, you're actually good, just as often as like, oh, we've heard you're good, so we're coming in. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think
they don't assume you suck, yeah, as well.
No, they've barely changed. I think that there's an increasing audience of people who are super, super, super tuned in, who are, you know, who are really paying a lot of attention, who, you know, who read all the interviews and know, you know, the guys who know everything, like, yeah, those guys are respectful and they know what's up, but
yeah.
But the kids are still coming in through their, you know, the gas mask culture, the Terry EBM and whatnot, which I don't mean to be dissing that, but it tends to be pretty humorless and they have a hard time with this sort of thing.
Wrapping their heads around.
they don't see the connection.
I know with reputation, I guess like what I'm trying to say is like a reputation. I mean, the Gossicles do have a reputation. Mm-hmm. Caustic does have a reputation. Whether or not my reputation is good or bad is probably the most questionable. But the Gossicles, I mean, people know who you are now. I mean, the name is out there. There's not as many people going, who the fuck are the Gossicles?
It's a band name. You don't forget it.
Exactly. But do you think things have eased a bit in terms of like the condescending bullshit? I mean, because I think we get it a lot more than... I guess maybe on the other side of the spectrum, a band that is not like us, that is a little more in the straight and narrow, gets the, well, you sound just like Combi Christ, you sound just like Grendel, or you sound just like VNV Nation. So I guess I'd prefer our side of things instead of just being, you sound just like. I mean, I get compared to Combi Christ, you know, on
Wait a minute.
One level.
Hold on. I got to cut you. I'm going to interrupt Brian and prevent him from talking just to be a jerk.
Okay.
But no, I do have to say about that. Here's the thing. If I've got a band that...
Good.
No, it's fine. You're not offended?
Just agreeing with you.
The thing is, if somebody was coming to me and saying, oh, you sound just like Combi Christ, for example, first of all, I'd say, wow, thanks. I didn't think my production was that great.
Yeah.
But I'd say, okay, well, there's, you know, that is, whether I agree with it or not, it's, you know, at least it's a, you know, it's a salient musical criticism. The thing that I don't like is when people come to me with criticism that is not valid, where, you know, it'll basically be, this is bad, not because you're doing something poorly, but because I don't understand what you're doing, and therefore it's bad. And people will flat out say that, like, I don't understand your jokes, so this is crap.
Yeah.
Or they'll say, you know, and it's like, if it's a legitimate criticism, even if I disagree with it, if somebody says, I think your production sucks, or if somebody says, I just don't like your songs, or you've got jokes that I don't think are funny, or anything like that, those are all legitimate criticisms, and those I'm fine with. Those I don't find disrespectful. In fact, I like hearing those criticisms, because that's, you know, helps me figure out what directions I want to move in.
Sure.
If 10 people tell me I sound like Combi Christ, maybe I sound like Combi Christ, right? So what bugs me, and I think what you're really talking about here, is not those kinds of criticisms. There's the kind of criticisms that don't really address anything, that are just, you know, that are disrespectful, or just people who just don't get it and are saying, you know, are talking just to talk and that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, then that's part of it. And I don't mind being compared to Combi Christ, but to me, I think I bitched about it a little bit on Facebook. I'm like, yeah, so that's, so I want to hear that song that Combi Christ did, like Lady Business. You know, it's more like, I know some songs definitely do.
Tractor.
Tractor?
Seriously.
Kinda, yeah. I guess that's the closest thing to it. But I mean, just the gamut I run. But it's like, to me, it's interesting to see how people, how the respect evolves, and I think it does. Hmm. I think, I mean, with the Gossicles, I think, I don't think it was necessarily a disrespect, but there was like that what? Like, well, what the fucking Gossicles?
Yeah, I mean, what the hell?
But now, like, you'll get on a bill, like, when you got announced for Resistance, a ton of people were freaking out because they saw you at InFest. Cool. And, you know, people saw you at Kinetic, and I just, one of my favorite things, and I've told you this time and time again, one of my favorite things is to watch the opening of the show and just looking at everyone who's never fucking seen you before.
Oh, yeah.
And just go, the first look of, what the fuck? Then the look of, huh? And then the fucking people are smiling and totally into it. And I love it. It's hysterical because every fucking show, I used to, when we were on tour, every fucking show there, people just like, what the shit fuck hell is this crap? Not crap, but like, what the fuck is going on? Then by like end of the first song, they're just like, all right, this is fun. All right. This is fun.
It definitely eschews expectations.
Well, yeah, sort of so the idea almost. I mean, I'm not gonna say I'm not guilty of that. Like we were talking about, like, respect. Like, I mean, are the Gothsicles ever gonna be on top of the whole thing? Like, no.
Yeah.
Because it's reactionary. But the name's certainly getting more out there just because I haven't stopped.
Yeah.
And thousands of millions of years. And I really like Eric's point about legitimate criticism. Like, if somebody says to me, like, dude, we're all fucking sick of these tracks and we've seen you 1,000 times, you need to write some new shit.
Sure.
Like, clearly, you know, I need to write some new shit. But, like, you know, people on the internet, like, what? I just can't do it. I don't get, like, you know, then fine. You know, I just don't care, like... You know, I fucking squawk all my lyrics. Like, if you don't like it, I fucking
there's a lot of other shit to listen to.
I don't care anymore. I know it's such a punk rock fucking, like, thing to say, but, like, I just don't anymore.
I'm not going to sing differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to do this differently. I'm still going to be a loud fuck. I'm still gonna be me. I mean, you know, it's like, if you don't like it, fine. You know, plenty of boring shit you can listen to.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it, but there's plenty of shit that you'll just want to hear in the club, and then you'll go see them live, and they won't do anything live, and they won't be that interesting. And this
I kind of like Melda Weiss, though.
Oh, that's just so mean. Why'd you have to say that?
I just wanted to be mean
to Eric, who's gonna be there tonight, and I'm gonna point this out that he has to listen to the podcast now to do that. No, but
I was actually listening to Melda Weiss in the car, so the name was on. Okay.
That's funny. No, but I mean, it's just like, yeah, I mean, I've come to the point where I accept the fact that it's like, yeah, I'm not for everyone, and I'm as big as I will probably ever be with whatever that means, and I've gotten farther than anyone will ever give me credit for, or ever had thought I would. Well, Caustic 5 years ago versus Caustic now.
Yeah. Still got the demos.
Yeah, well. Yeah, they're out, you know, but it's like, you know, I've taken something where I had no idea what I was doing and did drunk or high off my ass most of the time to the point where we get to go play in other countries, you know, and the point where we, you know, where I got on fucking Metropolis and the point where I'm actually selling a little bit and I can raise all this money in Kickstarter. So, I mean, it's just like, I've taken this farther than part of me keeps doing it just to say, all right, let's push it a little more, see what happens. Hey, let's push it a little. Exactly.
Did I just tell you a joke?
No.
Are you going to go there?
It wasn't really a joke. It was just kind of a statement of purpose. So, I mean, like, I guess, to me, it's like you said, Gossicles will never be on top. But I'm like, well, you guys kind of are in my book. But that's, and I'm not trying to kiss your ass. I'm just saying, like,
yeah, but the bands, way you do Caustic, I think you can.
Well, I think what Brian was trying to say with the Gossicles not being able to be on top is that a satirical work can't really get above the thing that it's satirizing.
See, I should just, like,
that was a good
filter
one.
Things through you.
That was a good. That was a good
much
one.
More erudite.
Yeah, it was.
I mean,
but
it's
that's
like,
but it's true in some ways.
Erudite, three syllable. I'm stupid.
And I mean, we can get as
is it erudite?
Erudite. Erudite.
But yeah, I guess that makes some sense. But at the same time, we're not gonna.
Thank you for just bringing it back down to the appropriate level there. That was...
I mean, yeah, but I mean, to me, it's like I'm just never gonna get that big because I will not. I don't want to give myself the compliment. I'm not gonna pander. I'm still gonna make the same fucking music
you
I want
to
make.
Did. That's I've actually kind of been trying. To
I question whether anybody is actually pandering. I think I think that's an unfair criticism. I mean, some people certainly, but I think that's an unfair criticism that is frequently levied against. Not to, you know, talk about Andy all fucking day, but against.
And I actually wasn't even talking about it. I mean, I think,
but
I think he's phenomenal.
To me, it's.
What do you mean by pandering?
People won't write outside the box. I can listen to so many bands, so many albums. Some were very good live, and some are good pals. And I'm just gonna make everybody I know paranoid that listens to this. I'm probably talking about you. It's all the same types of songs. And Null Device, well, I consider my heroes just because they fucking flip styles as much as the Dark Clan, and it's crazy type shit. But
can't call you right back.
But no, okay, I mean, I think pandering is a little mean, but it's just right now, I don't think people push themselves creatively as much as they can. I don't think they're writing personal songs outside of I Hate This Bitch or Gerspit Industrial.
I don't know. I don't think that the bands that you're accusing of doing that are the ones on top. I think that almost every example you just gave, I think is contrary to the people who we've seen have the most success in the last couple of years.
Yes, but most of them only get to that success when they start actually doing that a little bit more. But I mean, even a lot of the bands that are on top, and I'll say on top in Europe even more so than here, wow. I would say because I think that there's a lot of, they're not taking chances musically, they're not taking chances creatively, and they're staying within a shell because, especially in Europe,
Imperative Reaction. Right. And first
not
of all,
a band I was talking about
now,
at all.
Well,
but,
okay, I know you're not. But let me first of all, let me say I'm not talking about Europe because I think that there's the way that this whole thing operates in Europe is very different from the.
I just wanted to eat your French fries.
Oh, over there. I want a French fry too.
All right, so keep talking. Yeah, we're gonna be
there's like one fry.
Got like 5 minutes. I think we'll give this. I actually split this into two parts.
We gotta load in.
Yeah. First of all, I'm not talking about Europe at all because it's a whole different issue over there. I think that some of the European scene has a lot more of this problem that you're talking about. People have more limited expectations sometimes.
Well,
But we're no longer. A couple of years ago, the environment was you gotta succeed in Germany. You know, even if you're an American band, you gotta go get a hit in Germany and then have it filter over to New York and Los Angeles, and then it'll get to the rest of the country. And that's just, we're not in that environment anymore.
No,
at all. And so there's a band like Imperative Reaction where Ted, you know, starts off doing one thing, drastically shifts styles. Goes through this massive, you know, bout of personal improvement in terms of his, you know, his vocal abilities and things like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he talks about it all the time. You know, he was like, he decided his vocals suck, so he went and got, you know, he got training. He put a lot of work into it. And, you know, he went and, I mean, he's done all the, you know, he writes very personal songs about lots of different topics, even though he does, you know, use what's that one word that he uses in every single fucking song?
Fall.
Yeah, everything's about falling.
That's okay.
I think he must have some sort of equilibrium issue that he hasn't told us about. But I think, you know, he's done all of these things that you're saying that bands are not doing, and he's meeting with more and more and more success all the time.
Yeah, there's exceptions to the rule. And I think more that I talk
about... I don't think it's just that there's exceptions to the rule. I think all the truly successful bands, the ones that are on top, are doing those things. And there are many medium-tier bands that are not taking risks for whatever reason. And maybe that's just, you know, who they are creatively.
I think the
top ones are the ones that are taking risks, are doing those things. So I think it's cutting yourself out of the game too early to say that, because you're doing these riskier and more unusual things that you will meet with less success. So that doesn't make sense.
Well, I mean, it's how far you're going to push it. And I'm not saying, I'm cool with where I am and what I'm doing, and I think I'm talking more about the European scene in general,
yeah.
Just because of the I've seen the attitudes just when we had to play with them in other venues, and it's not every band. no, I'm fucking playing the festivals with them. Just the attitude, and Thomas Rainer brought that up just about how a lot of bands just think about themselves.
Yeah,
they don't fucking care. They'll overplay their sets. They'll do X, Y, Z. And to me, most of them aren't saying anything interesting. But it's also not my world. So I guess I'll give you some credit on that. I am being a bit harsher than it can be argued against.
Yeah, and I have to say, we had this past weekend at Kinetic. A lot of times I always say, oh, you know, the Germans don't get us. You know, we have a really hard time with the Germans. We had a great time hanging out with the Funker Vote guys and the Decroops guys this weekend. They both really liked us. They've also put on great shows. The Decroops show, man, that was... It sucks for you guys didn't make it to Kinetic and are having to deal with that tour being canceled. But, you know, so I think perhaps we need to re-examine some of our generalizations even about the European scene. But,
yeah, well, and again, there's exceptions. There's many exceptions. Yeah. And you're probably right about the middle-tier bands, but those are the bands that I'm paying attention to because those are the bands that are coming up the ranks because I don't really listen to most of the new stuff or the big guns because I don't know. I have the old stuff. Unless it's really good, I'll check out the new Combat Christ because I always want to hear what Andy's doing. I'll check out the new Osico. I'll check out a couple other bands because I like them. Yeah. But I'll say it is mostly the middle tier bands. But I think it's getting back to a point that I read on a note on Facebook that somebody said that there aren't that many people writing personal songs. They're writing industrial songs from a lyrical point of view, and that might still be the middle tier bands as well.
For me, those are the same thing. When I write a personal song, when I write a song that's really personal, I will cache whatever personal stuff I'm writing usually in very traditional industrial metaphors. And every the four very personal songs on my album are absolutely examples of that, because that's what's personal to me. To me, you know, the all this mechanical, you know, industrial sci-fi bullshit, that's what is important to me. So when I write personal songs, that's what you hear. And I think that there are a lot of bands out there that are just writing straight-up dance music, and that's fine, too.
Yeah, I mean, everything has its place. I mean, yeah.
But I don't think that it's fair to say, oh, they're writing industrial songs, and therefore they're not personal.
Well, I'm saying that there's much more of a template being displayed than... This was like a good old days story. Like, in the good old days, they didn't do this, you know? But which is always...
That is a bunch of malarkey. I can think of so many examples off the top of my head within Cold Wave, within older Terror EBM, and, you know, back when it was, like, Agrotech or whatever.
Sure, I mean, there are...
90s electro-industrial. Even going back to, like, some of the 70s and 80s bands that were doing quote-unquote experimental shit that got all basically just doing the same song over and over again, copying each other.
No, and I've talked about that too in blogs and shit like that. But I think
the bands that shine out from that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's the 1,000 bands you remember 4 or 5 because they're the ones that were worth remembering.
Yeah, unless you're me and you just buy everything because you're an idiot.
Yeah, well, that's something to be said for that. But I do think there's some credence to it, though. I mean, the fact that people do fall into those patterns. I'm not accusing you, but I mean, I see what you're saying, and I never think about it in those terms.
Yeah.
But I don't think in those terms, but I've also not thought in those terms in a while. And of course, I'll put mechanical shit in there once in a while, too, if it works for what I'm doing. But
yeah.
I don't write it with that intent. But I guess, I mean, that's kind of what Caustic is, and that's kind of how I've also branched out to even get an audience in some respects. I'll do a Booze Up and Riot, and, you know, which will go over because then some people just don't get it, but whatever. I don't know, I think of certain bands that are pushing what I consider the boundaries, and I consider the rest just still there, and they're kind of floating.
Well, some of them will get there and find ways to push the boundaries, and I think some of them will probably not continue.
Yeah.
You know, and we will remember the ones that actually managed to do something, and then there will be a couple bands that we'll be annoyed by for the next 10 years because they keep on doing the same shit, never get any better, and for some reason will still be popular.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, I mean, like you said, there's the dance music where it's all style over substance.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where I start getting bothered because I just want to hear more substance.
Yeah.
But of course, that's what you're hearing in the clubs, and but...
It's club music.
It's club music, but
it's
different
stuff.
But you can hear Ministry So What, and that's not necessarily club music, but it does its job, you know? And I think there's a fear amongst DJs. We're really jumping topics here a lot, but there's a fear amongst DJs to play something that might not be 4 on the floor or might not have that ease of compatibility with the audience.
True, but, you know, I mean, okay, let's look at, like, the Pro Noise stuff, for example, like Noise FX and Sam.
Sure.
I love those bands.
Yeah, no, me too.
They're absolute. I mean, and there's no... Obviously, that is not personal music at all,
no.
Right? And so I feel like what you're saying sounds like, well, if it's not personal, then it lacks substance. I mean, do those things have substance?
They have substance as club, but I would say what connects me is I'm talking more lyrically. I'm talking more. There's the dance music, and then there's the stuff I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So there, and it doesn't mean it's not meant to denigrate the or condescend to the other stuff because they both have their place.
Your computer just did something weird. Was that?
No, it's no worries.
Oh, okay.
But it's I don't know. It's interesting to me. But I we could have super long debates about this.
Yeah, we're going in circles here.
But
we gotta load in.
In half an hour.
You don't have to do that.
Okay, I gotta take a phone call.
Okay, cool. And let's finish up, Brian.
Oh, okay. Sorry,
you made a crash. No, we're at over an hour and a half. That was kind of it. So.
I was just going to tell you that you should tell whoever you were going to call that I say hello.
Do you know Bob?
I don't know, do I?
Okay.
Yeah, thanks for that. All right, well, anyway, this is we ended up with a kind of circuitous ending,
Eric's
but...
saying, like, this matter saying, like, this amazing shit, and I just kind of crush it. That's what I do.
It's okay, man. Brian, thank you for coming and being a part. And why are we shaking hands, dude? It's like...
I'm a fucking idiot.
That was actually... Yeah, that was actually... I can't express to you how weird it was just seeing that.
That was weird.
That was actually, like, that seemed
I'm
like...
glad we just met. And... I haven't slept next to each other for nights.
To me, it read more like a goodbye forever. And I was like, wait, are we like playing a show together in like an hour?
But
I appreciate the time we spend together.
No, yeah, me too, man. It was good. We'll have to do these again.
I despise you both with a fiery passion that knows no bounds.
And that's why you'll never be on this
again.
It was
really great to be here with you. Thank you for the person on the inside.
The ever talkative Eric Gottesman and the super awesome Brian. There you go. I was trying to think of a different comparison, but super awesome. Whatever. So fuck it. Thanks, guys.
We're gonna do a
show, and you'll all hear about it later because it's gonna be an awesome show. This might be a two-parter. It's a pretty long thing.
That's what she said.
I hate you so fucking much.